welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road, and, you know, anyway.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And we're all three together again for tonight's episode, The Man with One Red Shoe.
I've been waiting weeks to talk about this movie.
Whose list was this on?
My list.
Okay. Brother Jay, take it away.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. No, this was a funny movie from my childhood. I thought it was funny. It had some funny parts rewatching it, but it clearly was a movie of its time and did not age well.
I'd have to agree.
But I had fond memories because it has a great cast and great people.
It does?
But it was very much a product of its time. Our standards were clearly much lower.
Well, this is a weird type of movie that just doesn't get made anymore. Like a really kind of small, lighthearted, not quite farce, but close to it. I would put this in the same category as like The Money Pit or Ruthless People or Down and Out in Beverly Hills. Just kind of small, contained movies that aren't trying to set up franchises.
It would really be like a sitcom now.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, now don't tell me that Ruthless People is going to fall into a hole now.
I suspect Ruthless People is not going to hold up as well as we think it does. But we'll find out.
Yeah, to skip ahead a little bit, do you know what Tom Hanks has to say about this movie?
Oh, no. What?
His quote was, "It's not a very good movie. It doesn't have any real clear focus to it. It isn't about anything particularly that you can honestly understand. It made no money at all."
Right? I understood what the movie was about.
You also know this is a remake?
Oh, really? Of what?
Of a French film called The Tall Blonde Man with One Black Shoe.
Okay. Well, maybe we have to watch that.
May no.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, this is a 1985 film that was a remake of a 1972 French farce.
So it made it cheap to write.
Yes.
And no Jerry Lee Lewis. No Jerry Lewis.
And I don't really have a sense for how big of a star Tom Hanks was at this point in the mid-80s. But he was still a pretty big star, right? I mean, it was weird that... Like, he didn't even show up for the first, 15 minutes of the movie? Didn't barely said anything for, like, the first 45 minutes. And was really the straight man of the whole thing.
The straight man without being particularly likable.
Yeah, he was really lacking, like, the Tom Hanks charisma that we come to expect.
Exactly.
He didn't have any warmth to him. It was weird. This is a weird movie.
Yeah, I was expecting a little... I wanted the kooky, you know, Roxanne Tom Hanks until I realized, oh yeah, that's because that was Steve Martin.
Well, it could be Bosom Buddies Tom Hanks. That would have been fun.
Sure.
Bosom Buddies Tom Hanks was 80 to 82. This movie was 85.
When was
Splash? Bachelor Party was 80... I was getting there. Jeez. Bachelor Party was 84 and Splash was 84.
Okay, so this is right in the beginning of the Hanks movie time.
Volunteers was 85. 86 was The Money Pit. 86 was also Nothing in Common.
When was Big?
88.
Oh, okay. All right.
Nothing in Common, that was with Jackie Gleason, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
We saw that in the theaters together.
He lost toes.
The Burbs was 89. Turner and Hooch was 89. He was making two movies a year. Nobody does that anymore. Joe versus the Volcano was 90. Bonfire of the Vanities was 90.
Have either of you seen Joe versus the Volcano anytime recently?
No.
No.
I caught a little bit of it on TV. It was not at all what I remembered it to be.
In a negative sense?
No.
Oh, so it was good.
It was, I think it's a much smarter movie than I understood it to be at the time.
Well, you were like 6 at the time, right?
13?
Oh, okay. Well, close.
Wow. Budgeted $16 million, gross $8
million. Yeah. Well, okay. Now, the director is Stan Dragotti, who is best known as a commercial director who conceived and put together the I Love New York campaign.
Well, it's funny because this whole movie looks like a commercial.
A little bit.
It's shot oddly. It's got some very odd angles and activity of the actors. And at some points, it's very fuzzy, and it's fuzzy on purpose.
Ooh, speaking of angles and fuzzy, he was also Cheryl Teague's first husband.
Oh, all right. Well, that's interesting.
And he also directed Love at First Bite, Mr. Mom, and Necessary Roughness.
Love at First Bite. That's Leslie Nielsen, right?
No. Jim Carrey.
Was it?
Oh, Lauren Hutton and Jim Carrey and Aaron man. Gray?
What am I thinking of? Of Dracula Dead Again or something?
Dead and Loving It.
Yeah.
Dead and Loving It, right.
Oh, George Hamilton was in Love at First Bite. No? George Hamilton.
Boy, we're terrible tonight.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yo! Speak for yourself. I'm all over this. By the way, the fact that you guys are speaking very negatively about this movie makes me want to defend it.
Love at First Bite. George Hamilton. He was Count Vladimir Dracula.
Okay, cool. I remember from that movie was... That wasn't the Jim Carrey movie, right? The Jim Carrey movie? Once Bitten, maybe?
Once Bitten, yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, no.
Yeah, love how's first that, Mr. Smug?
I remember something about when he turned into a bat and the black family thought it was a black chicken and they wanted to kill it to eat it. It wasn't very progressive.
I was gonna say, that movie wouldn't get made today, would it?
Well, it was in that whole same vein as Zorro, the Gay Blade, and that kind of stuff. Oh, speaking of which, this probably should go to housekeeping, but I'm on a tangent right here. I saw Valley of the Dolls this weekend.
Wow.
Have you seen it recently?
No.
It is a weird movie.
It was a weird movie last time I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I expected it to be more... I mean, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls is a nudie, cutie Roger Corman kind of movie written by Roger Ebert. But I was expecting Valley of the Dolls to be a little more serious. And it was trying a little bit, but it was wacky. Not in a comedy way, though.
It was wacky in a David Lynch kind of way?
No, just kind of strange. It's just kind of a strange thing.
Okay, well.
I also watched the movie The Neon Demon.
How was that?
That was not good. That was like 2001 without the space baby ending. It was very, very stylish. And I didn't care for 2 hours. I wanted to.
Well, you have lots of practice.
Yeah, while we're tangenting, I forget if I ever mentioned that a little while ago I watched Midnight Special. Have we talked about that on the podcast?
No.
It's the Jeff Nichols movie with of course, Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon, yeah, okay, yes. Mm-hmm. And?
It was good. I think I'm officially a Jeff Nichols fan.
Sweet.
It was slow, though, but in a good way.
But it got somewhere, right? Hopefully. Like, I don't care if it's slow if it gets you someplace.
That was my ice machine. Everything's okay. Yeah, so do you remember when Laurie Singer was a thing?
What? Well, okay, tell me about Laurie Singer.
I have no idea.
So we're not going to talk about this movie at all?
No, we will. We will.
Okay.
First of all, let's start with the positive. Laurie Singer is a concert cellist in real life. And I owe an apology to Barbara Bach. Because she wasn't nearly as flat as Laurie Singer was. Laurie Singer was like flat, emotionless, almost autistic. And perhaps it was as directed, but come on.
But this also continues the spirit of spies not really worrying about being identified.
No, that is true. Well, I mean, this is a certain thing. It's a farce. It's a spy farce.
Well, I gotta say, this had a pretty promising cast, though.
Oh, the cast is great. I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of the cast.
Yeah.
Dabney Coleman, Charles Durning, Jim Belushi, Carrie Fisher.
What the heck kind of movie uses Tom Noonan as comic relief?
Exactly, yes. It's awesome.
Holy crap.
Oh, and let me point out, va-va-voom Carrie Fisher.
Yes, maybe it is a certain age, but she was way sexier in this movie than in Return of the Jedi.
Yes, or anything else I've ever seen her in, I think.
Also because she was doing the Tarzan imitation.
Yeah, well, she was cute, too. I think the day after I saw this, I saw her on the Today Show, and she does look like she's had a stroke, and was possibly heavily medicated.
She is the actress who became a cultural icon overnight when she took on the role of Princess Leia in Star Wars and created a worldwide frenzy with that famous hairstyle. And her acting, can you believe that, was nearly 4 decades
ago. We, of course, are talking about the one, the only,
Carrie Fisher.
And now Carrie and her hair will return to the big screen just in time for Christmas in the highly anticipated movie. It's called
Star Wars The Force Awakens. And she's here. We're so happy. This is your
this
dog.
This is Gary. I tried What's to get with- him in the movie, but...
What's up with the tongue?
The tongue comes with him as a kind of like fries.
It's an accessory.
It's a side.
side dish. It just does that. All right. So you have not yet seen Star Wars,
yes,
right?
Yes, I have.
You did? When did you see it?
Just a couple days ago.
And?
It's really, really, people are going to be happy.
Can you give
and
us anything?
Lie.
Any crumbs? Any bits of info?
Well, I don't look as good as I would like to, but then you can see that from there. I look very tense and like I'm retaining fluids.
I thought it was Tyne Daly there. Anyway.
There's a lot of people that sort of looks like. And then you have these other younger pictures of me, and if that's not distressing.
Yeah, I know. We all go through that, though, sweetie.
We do. Does it end? No.
What?
It gets worse and worse. The only thing I can think of is in 10 years, I'm going to think, God, I wish I still looked like this, which is hilarious to me now.
But it's everything is relative. You know that. You've written how many
relatives.
Books? Relatives. Everything is.
I just saw her on Late Night with Stephen Colbert, and she was pretty funny.
Oh, okay. Well.
You know, we had a lot of pranks on the set, and one time we cut off Mark Hamill's hand, and they decided to keep that in the movie.
Turns out it took Peter Mayhew 9 hours to grow out all that Chewbacca hair.
And John Williams actually had to add all that music to the movie to cover up the fact that I was constantly humming Kung Fu Fighting.
They couldn't afford to have fancy special effects during the first movie, so to save money, the actors had to move things with their minds.
Mark Hamill actually did this weird thing where he made people smell his lightsaber and guess where it had been.
I heard that one. Yeah.
And you know who had actually the most sex out of the whole cast? The Ewoks. They screwed like rabbits. It's true. Their trailer had to be hosed out twice a day. Disgusting.
The original line was, "Luke, it's me, your pappy."
Yoda was real and delicious.
Carrie Fisher, everybody.
Yeah, she had her dog on the Today Show, and she was, like, speaking through clenched jaws, and so maybe she's a little more polished for Colbert.
Yeah. She did have her dog, though, so.
Maybe it's a therapy dog? I don't know.
Her dog has a funny name, right?
Her dog is, the dog always sticks its tongue out, right? It's a, kind of that problem.
Yes.
Yeah. So okay, so back to the plot of The Man with One Red Shoe.
Well, the opening of this film, which is some kind of, looks like some kind of CIA setup to implicate somebody else, basically fulminates in the stereotype that all the Arabic Moroccan clerk merchants are all coke fiends.
There's that. There's also some bureaucratic hijinks where Dabney Coleman is the deputy director of CIA and wants to be the director, and the director is gonna eliminate him from the competition by forcing him to resign because of a failed drug smuggling operation.
But he has that giant Tyco football game size timer.
The timer.
He had a little timer, a little pocket timer.
Oh.
That was digital, that looked like a giant garage door opener. They just had four digital readouts with like a red light and a green light. It was the most low rent thing. I'm sure it was really high tech in 85. But it was ridiculous.
This also had the feeling of sort of a, yeah, like a TV show almost, because like Jim Belushi was just like full on screaming the entire time.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was as directed, but you know, Tom Hanks was kind of low key, but a lot of the other characters were super high energy for really no reason.
We haven't even mentioned Squiggy.
Yeah, exactly.
Criminally underused in this movie.
Yes. Hello.
Also, the fact that they have a setup for Tom Hanks having a dental issue, which he then revisits in Castaway.
I've never seen Castaway.
What?
At some point, I'll see Castaway.
Have you seen Castaway, Drew?
Yes, I have.
What did you think of it?
I did not like it when I first saw it, but it is somehow really rewatchable. Like if you catch it when it's on TV, you're stuck there.
I thought it was a really good movie. I thought it was a depressing movie. I mean, it's a terribly depressing downer of a movie, but I thought it was great.
I thought it was hard to watch when I first saw it, but Tom Hanks is so good in it that he is really captivating.
Especially because I think there's like 28 minutes of silence in the movie where there's just nothing but Tom Hanks on screen with no dialogue.
Well, Tom Hanks is very funny.
Hey, who was the weird, the fake dentist assassin dude? He looked really familiar, but I couldn't figure out where he was from.
Yeah, he was.
This movie was full of, oh, that guy.
Yeah, they were only partially recognizable. But Tom Noonan was really recognizable.
It actually took me until he lost all his teeth to figure out that was Tom Noonan. Because he's always kind of wearing like a hat and glasses, and he's really skinny in this movie.
Well, yeah, compared to when he was Francis Dolarhyde.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Carrie Fisher's dog by the name is Gary Fisher.
Really?
For real.
So what about David Ogden Stiers?
Yeah, that was a weird choice.
I don't know. I love to see Winchester.
That was really bizarre, but he was great.
Yeah. I mean, what can we say? It's a spy versus spy kind of hijinks. Basically, the conceit of the plot is that Edward Herman, our favorite father from The Electric Grandmother.
Lost Boys. Favorite father from The Lost Boys. That's the right answer.
He's tasked to find basically a fall guy to put Dabney Coleman's people on as if he's the secret agent who's going to come and spill the beans on Dabney Coleman's group. So because Tom Hanks went through the airport, arrived on a flight, and he was wearing one red shoe, which, by the way, is kind of a throwaway. I mean, I kind of like the way they just sort of threw away why he was wearing one red shoe. But
did they ever explain it?
Well, they didn't explain it so much as Jim Belushi did show up with his other shoe, though.
Yeah.
Which I thought was fun. So, basically, yeah, Brown, the character Brown, who is played by Edward Herrmann, just decides, he'll be the guy. He's got one red shoe. That's interesting. So we'll just pick him out. So they made him out to be the guy who was going to testify or whatever. And he was really pretty much signing this. I mean, if you want to look at it non-farcically, he was signing this guy's death warrant.
Yeah, he was. And the director of the CIA was okay with that. But Edward Herrmann was not.
Yeah. It turns out Edward Herrmann was a relatively good guy in the whole thing. And so we have this Tom Hanks is a fish out of water, not knowing he's a fish or he's out of water. But he is a concert violinist, and he has a friend named Morris, Jim Belushi, who plays the timpani. And Morris's wife and Richard, Tom Hanks, had at least one romantic encounter before. It's not like they're having an affair as much as he got drunk at a party or something. And she wants to continue it as an affair. And he doesn't in a giggly, I can't refuse you because you're dressed in Tarzan things. And was there an implication that, there was, like, anal play and stuff involved in Tarzan?
I didn't get that. But
nope.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, never mind.
I might have had different subtitles than you.
Yeah, well, okay, apparently. See, I'm
we should just go into housekeeping.
Yeah, exactly. It's man with one red shoe. It's fine, but it's only if it's on TV. If you're on TV, watch it. It's interesting. I wouldn't rent it. I wouldn't buy it. I did buy it. I bought it specifically for this podcast.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I owe you $10. And
handling. No, not at all. No, especially after you bought me the wonderful documentary.
So I think there are some parts of this movie that it's all like very sitcom-esque. So it's like it was as if this was planned as a television sitcom miniseries, and they said, no, let's just put it into a movie. Because there was lots of little stuff that on itself was amusing, but just didn't ever pay off. You know, where Charles Durning and Edward Herrmann have that sprinkler conversation where they have to stand in the middle of the sprinklers. I mean, that's a little bit funny.
Yeah, no, totally. It's a get smart funny, though.
And then when they're all in the airport waiting for the man with one red shoe, which they didn't know, the pilots are in the bar taking shots.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, funny. When Tom Hanks is then riding his bike later, he has a Toshiba cassette Walkman with tortoise glasses. That's a big advertisement. Also, that was a big deal back then because the Walkman, just you put the cassette into the Walkman, but, it was open. It was an open-faced machine. But he had time in the middle of a chase where he could put on all his gear and still be chasing after an ambulance. So there was lots of weird stuff.
I thought the most bizarre thing was, like, when they messed with his apartment and they didn't have time to put everything back together. So his apartment became just this set of physical comedy. But the whole time, I think on purpose, Tom Hanks, the star of your movie, is not being funny at all. Really, really weird to experience a movie where funny stuff is happening around Tom Hanks, but he is not being funny because I think he's naturally just funny.
He tried to wash his face by flushing the toilet. That was funny.
It was almost like he was too straight about it.
Yeah.
He was a little more surprised.
Yeah, it was weird.
Like, there should have should have been a level of exasperation.
Mm-hmm.
That Jim Belushi had the entire time. Maybe he was all coked up. I don't know.
Also, I have to say that there is a point in the movie where Tom Hanks is in the bathroom brushing his teeth because Maddie's waiting for him. And he writes out music notes. He writes in a full staff, a full measure of music on the mirror in pretty rapid succession. It was pretty impressively fast.
The power of rehearsal.
Also, I don't know. I mean, there were like for instance, when they used the supercomputer to they controlled the entire nation's missile system to decode his secret message in his violin. I thought it was a funny line that, you know, oh, what are they going to invade on a Thursday? But ultimately, it didn't really. I mean, that was it. The whole setup for that one line, which was not good enough, I don't think.
Also, I wrote a note. I was thinking while I was watching this, if this had a different score, it could have been a thriller. If they would have just taken the score out and put in some like creepy music and some thrill, it would have been a good thriller. Because there wasn't enough comedy to make it a comedy movie.
Yeah, it was just odd.
It was very odd.
It felt like it was translated. Maybe like everybody was dubbed.
They dubbed out the funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I chuckled in a couple parts. It was familiar. I knew where the beats were coming. So I remembered enough of the movie to be like, oh, yeah, I remember this. But yeah, I'm not.
Well, okay, here's
not going to watch it again.
Well, here's strictly from a feeling perspective, because I remember distinctly when watching it. And it was several weeks ago. But I remember watching it in the very beginning, especially because Laurie Singer was just so stiff and blank, and Dabney Coleman was fine. You know, you're comfortable in Dabney Coleman's presence, you're comfortable in Charles Durning's presence, you're comfortable in Edward Herman's presence, but you know, it wasn't quite funny enough, and I'm like, oh no, this is gonna be how Drew felt about Roxanne, or it's, you know, it's just gonna be one of those things. But by the end, I don't know if it was the score or the fact that at least it did have some sort of, like, you know, action at the end. At the end, I thought, well, this is fine. This is a fine use of time. That wasn't great. I mean, you know, I don't think I would have bought it if I had the opportunity again. But luckily, I own it.
Well, and this movie couldn't get made without, I mean, Dabney Coleman, so the character, so patronizing to Laurie Singer, to Maddie.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting because if she had any reaction at all, that would have been, yeah, that could have been his thing, his little thing. But maybe it was because of the time, it wasn't such a glaring thing. It was just a casual sexism.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty ooky.
You know, when she first appeared on screen, I thought that she was going for like a really stiff, like Brigitte Nielsen type of performance.
Yes.
But as the movie went on, I came to realize that that was not a choice. That was not a choice she made. It just was.
And that's the thing. It's like, you get more warmth out of a Patrick Nagel painting, but the same fashion.
Indeed.
So are you ready? Already for the verdict?
Sorry.
So what would you rate it?
I don't think this movie's rateable. It's a D. It's not the worst we've seen. It's no Tiptoes, you know, but it's not a good movie. Also, it doesn't stand well the test of time, so it didn't age well. So that's another problem with it, is it just didn't age well. And there wasn't enough comedy in it for you to stay laughing, to be interested. So it was hard to watch.
Was it worth it, Brother Drew?
That's actually a really difficult question. Was it worth it? I'm not mad at it. I think it's better than a D. Let's say it was worth it just to experience how weird of a movie it was. I mean, it's certainly dated, but it's interesting. You don't see movies like this very much anymore. It's not that long. I mean, it's barely an hour and a half. So, yeah, I'd say it's worth it. There's a lot of people in it.
Yeah, I'd probably give it like a C-. I think it was better than a D. And yeah, I'm not angry with it, but I just wish it was more. I wish it. Maybe it was the time period didn't know that it needed to do what it was trying to do harder, or maybe it was trying to do too many little things. Maybe it got lost in the nuance. Although I don't think so.
No. If you're someone who has any affection for Princess Leia, then I think this movie is worth it.
Absolutely. Or if you're a Jim Belushi completionist.
Who isn't a Jim Belushi completionist?
Or if you're interested in the baseball scouting of a one David L. Lander. Hello. He's a baseball scout now. Has been for many years.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Shortest movie review ever.
Yeah. Moving on.
We got to pick better movies.
Yeah, I think there are better movies coming up, although there's some bad ones.
Luckily, we have an awesome one coming up next week. I'm really excited about
it. Oh, we do. No, we have stuff to talk about next week.
What is next week?
Next week is Moonraker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love Moonraker.
Oh, Moonraker will give us stuff to talk about. So, can I start housekeeping?
I'm smiling already.
Yes.
Housekeeping!
I want to start housekeeping with thanking you guys for not only coming through when I let you down last week because I had car issues that I don't even want to talk about necessarily. although, let me point out that the awesome deal I got on Dad's Expedition was an awesome deal $2,000 ago, and now it's a little less awesome deal. but it's still running. We'll see. Every time I start the car, though, I expect it to just burst into flames.
At least you have peace of mind.
Yeah. I didn't say it in the podcast, of course, because I wasn't here for it. But when my car was at the shop, literally across the street from us, from my office, there was a fully engulfed car fire in the parking lot. So you could look out our window and see a big column of black smoke from a car that was just burning to the ground. And all I could think of was, lucky. He's going to end up with a check instead of a bill at the end of that. So back to what my real housekeeping is. Thank you guys for stepping up and stepping up in such a major way. Not only did you guys do a fantastic job reviewing the documentary Oasis Supersonic, but it was one of the more heartfelt episodes, and it also drew the attention, if only a minor attention, of the director of said film.
That's crazy.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Really is nuts. Yeah.
So, I mean, so what happened is, you know, I have a Twitter account for Not in a Creepy Way, and basically only gets used when I retweet somebody else's tweets, which I almost never do because I'm never on Twitter, or when we release an episode, it goes out as a Twitter thing. And I'm sure that Matt Whitecross, or whatever that's his handle at least, I'm sure he's got some sort of thing set up so he knows when we mention his movies, or maybe he's got some sort of alert or whatever. But, yeah, he liked our tweet, so... And we didn't get a cease and desist letter, although I didn't really use any clips from the film. But, yeah, so that was exciting. And I thank you for the movie. It's a great documentary, and it made me think a lot more about Oasis, and I think I like the band a lot more than I did before.
Yeah, I actually wanted to hear your thoughts on if and how it changed your opinion of the Gallagher brothers.
Yeah, I mean, I really understood what you were talking about as far as how, like, Liam is much more of a tragic figure than what I expected. I expect Liam to be sort of the asshole, like Kanye West kind of figure. Although it turns out he may be a tragic figure too. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's like neither of them were monsters. They were just young, and yeah, I really appreciated when Jason was talking about how he wished, like, halfway through he could just stop the movie because he knew it was coming next, you know? He's like, this is going to be horrible at the end. But yeah, and the extras where the director talks about how he filmed it, you know, he's actually talking about both a reunion and a sequel to the documentary.
Oh, so awesome. I'm all for that.
So yeah, we'll see where that goes. But also,
if you're listening, there's three people right now that will buy it right now. Just right now.
Well, what's funny is I didn't appreciate before, even though I looked at a lot of videos just kind of cursorily on YouTube when I was, you know, getting the clips for the original What's the Story podcast. But until Drew pointed out in that podcast about the Liam pose, the movie really pointed out the Liam pose, but also the Liam walk. Like, I'm not, as a big fat guy, I can't do the Liam walk because it requires a certain amount of lankiness, but he definitely has a style of walking, and they both have very distinct ways of not giving a fuck. I mean, much different than each other.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, the one thing I get to experience only infrequently, what you guys did when it was a duo podcast, but we would change brothers every week, was wanting to jump into the conversation. And the only thing I really wanted to jump in on was that, because of course Jason forced me to watch the movie before I did the editing, was that I really like the style. I really like the editing of the documentary. I like the animations that he chose to do of the things that he didn't have film of. And I was shocked about how much actual film he had.
I thought it was amazing how much footage they had.
Yeah.
Like somebody had presence of mind to be filming a lot of stuff.
A lot of that stuff, I think, if you correct me, Drew, if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of it actually came from fans.
Like, yeah. Yeah. The concert footage.
Yeah. Like the, mm-hmm. obviously like the Nebworth footage was all professionally done, but the early concert footage was mostly fan driven.
Yep.
So that's pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, it was easy to do a good job because the source was so great. There, if the source material hadn't been good, Drew and I couldn't have, or at least I couldn't have done as great a job. But it was so easy because what you have, just the raw material was so tremendous. And that's the thing, is you'll be able to go back and rewatch it, because now I've now watched it 5 times. So you can go back and rewatch it, but it doesn't make it any less painful.
I don't know. I mean, don't discount the fact that you guys were very passionate, and that was awesome. I mean, it was great to hear.
Well, but I don't think we could have been that passionate if the material wasn't as strong as it was. What do you think, Drew?
You picked a good movie. That's all.
Yeah, that movie was jam-packed full of stuff to talk about, so that really made it easy. Yeah, I could have kept talking about that movie for another hour.
Plus, I love the fact that, like, all good works of art make you look at yourself. So, you know, we bring our own bags on this trip as brothers and just as people and as Americans, you know, because we don't know exactly what the culture was like in Manchester in 1991 or 1995 or the years in between. So, well done. Well done, Mr. Whitecross, if that's really... Can we check up and see if that's his real name?
So, when I also don't use... I think I use Twitter only to, like, read stuff, to get informed. I don't use it for any other purpose. Like, I never tweet anything.
I don't even have a Twitter.
So when, I assume you got notified that somebody liked your tweet?
Yeah.
So yeah, did you immediately know that that person was connected to the movie, or did you just see some random name and have to look up who it was?
Well, no. The answer is no. I did not know originally. But we get so few. I mean, I'm on Twitter so infrequently, and we really don't get a whole lot of non-Anderson feedback on the podcast. So any kind of feedback, I cherish. So tip of the hat to Rebecca Booth, Becky from the UK, because she'll like our stuff. She and Barry are the people, and Travis, people who will like all the Facebook things right away, which is very nice. So I looked at Matt Whitecross or whatever, and then I looked at the picture. Can you pull up Twitter? I don't know if it's easy to do, but if you pull up Twitter and look for @MattWhitecross, the picture I was like, hold on. Perhaps this person is a little more interesting than the average listener.
Yeah, because, yeah, he's just hanging out there with Liam.
Yes. Also, Liam apparently is like 900 feet tall, or Matt is really super small.
Yeah, I forgot to tell you guys, when I was first looking into when the movie was going to be released, to see if I could watch it before our first podcast, I ran into some YouTube footage of like the UK premiere of the movie, and it had Liam being interviewed. It was probably like a 15-minute clip, and I kind of skipped around a little bit. And as you can see in the picture of him with the director here, he's not looking that great nowadays. And he kind of had like the like substance abuse mannerisms going on, where he couldn't really sit still when he was talking, and he was talking a lot, you know, without taking any breaks. And it was really kind of sad, but he was still really coherent, but you could tell his personality was very different than when he was younger, even though he was still trying to be the I don't give a fuck rock star, but he's not anymore. There was one really like kind of sad exchange where like he remembered he was supposed to be that guy, so he like had to jump back into it like in the span of one sentence. Because the interviewer asked him, she asked him about a solo album that she had heard he was working on, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm working on it. It's gonna be out next year. I'm really proud of it. I think you're gonna like it. You know, I hope you like it. Actually, no, I don't hope you like it, because I don't do it for anybody. I just do it for me." And then she asked him if he could tell her any of the names of the songs, and he could not. I was like, oh, that was a bummer.
Well, that's the other thing. And okay, so while I'm thinking of it.
Okay, but one moment. So did you see Matt Whitecross has retweeted that Liam Gallagher's first solo gig has been announced?
Oh, cool. I did not see that, no. Although I am following Matt Whitecross now. By the way, just he liked the tweet. He did not retweet it, which would have been helpful. Or he didn't favorite the tweet either. So, you know, I don't think he's actually following us either, but that's okay. Not a problem. We're happy for whatever, even if it just took him clicking the like button, that's all that matters. I'm assuming it's not his staff that's clicking the like button either. Anyway, Buckinay. How fitting that the two younger brothers of a three brother family got together to talk about the two younger brothers of a three brother family and got the attention of the director of the film. So, very nice. one thing I thought of when I was watching the it's Nebworth, but a lot of the other concert footage too, is, you know, Liam's voice is not, say, technically great. And it's kind of on the whiny side, but the pitch of it, the whininess of it, really works well with all the like fuzzy guitars, because he just cuts right through it. You know, that's why it works.
Yeah, he's funny because he's nasally to begin with, but then when he gets his Liam posture going, he has his nose right up against the microphone. Like, it's not his mouth, it's his nose.
Oh, yeah, he is eating that mic, too.
More like snorting it.
Yeah. And he also does the thing where he's pretty tall, but he has the mic stand so that it's up really high, and he's, like, talking up into it, like I think Lemmy from Motorhead does that, and some other, I can't think of other artists who do that on purpose. But, yeah, it really goes with that Liam posture. So, yeah, no, I highly recommend that movie and listening to the podcast. Actually, I recommend listening to our Oasis podcast, watching the movie, and then listening to the podcast about the movie.
Oh, yeah, that's a question I had for you also, is because I think Jason and I both answered it, and you just answered it too, is what you think the right order is.
Yeah, I think listening to the podcast about what's the story is good because it gives you all that whole time frame to begin with, and it gives you a good sampling of songs. Although our mother pointed out that, yeah, she thought the Oasis songs were fine, but some of the other stuff I put in there, yeah. Like, I don't think she was a Travis fan, for instance.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, well. So, yeah, that was basically my housekeeping is I hate cars, and well done.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for editing, because we couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah, I was thinking, I wonder if they can edit it without me.
Nope.
Yeah. Nope.
No. Luckily, I like editing, so it's fun.
I'm glad you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both grateful and thankful.
Yeah, it's fun. So, okay, so who's next? I know that Jay has something to talk about, but Drew, should we save him for last?
No, I don't really have anything. Coming off of Thanksgiving weekend, everybody survived.
Excellent.
Got my Christmas tree up already. I think it's the earliest ever.
Yeah, we have yet to do ours. We've got an Advent hanging thing that we should probably get up in the next day or so, I think. But I don't know how we're going to do it. And I don't think we have anything to put in it yet, so it might be a long list of things she'll be disappointed about later.
But our father had his second knee replacement surgery today, and he is at home doing well already.
Which is awesome.
So shout out to Dad Anderson.
So, tip of the hat to you, Father Anderson. And Mother Anderson, tip of the hat to you for having to take care of him.
Again.
Yes. Although now with an even bigger heart. Or less constricted heart.
More heart capacity.
There you go. So, Brother Jay, I understand you have a story to tell.
Well, so Thanksgiving here was good. We went out to dinner to a restaurant we've gone to. Friday, we did Black Friday shopping with boyfriend Jesse, which he'd never been before. So that was fun. Went up to Christmas Mountain, got a Christmas tree cut down Friday. Walked into a tree stump, hurt my knee Friday afternoon. So that was fun, cutting the tree down. But so Derek has decided to undertake a project because I've been complaining about my office. I can't really use my office as my office to do the podcasting, which is what I had intended the office to be for, because the sound, basically my room turns into a big sound funnel. It just amplifies all the noises of the house into the room. And so my microphone picks up everything. So Derek decided that he wanted to be helpful, and so he has been talking for months about tearing all the sheetrock out, insulating the room, putting new sheetrock in, repainting, and then putting some other sound baffles around the room so that it can be infinitely more usable. Because the house was built in 1930, 1940, somewhere in there, and there is no insulation in any of the walls at all. So, in an effort to clean out the room, he came Saturday and said, "Hey, I want to do all the tear out now. So can you move some stuff out of your office now?" And I was like, "Well, can you give me a half an hour so I can move some stuff around and clean?" No, I want to get started now. So I was actually on my way to go visit a coworker who was in the hospital for a broken foot. But I said, "Well, give me half an hour and I can kind of clean some stuff up." "No, I want to get started now." Okay. So I started moving furniture around and picked up one of my end tables, which is a solid slab of wood on top of a solid metal leg stand. So it's a fairly substantially heavy end table, and I was wearing gloves, and I had lifted up the table so that it was at it was basically perpendicular to the floor, so the legs were pointing straight out from me, and the table slipped out of my hands and fell on my foot.
So the tabletop was in guillotine position?
Yes, the edge of the table and the frame where the table meets the frame landed diagonally across my foot, landing. And because of the way the legs hit the floor, it basically cantilevered back on my foot twice. It basically bounced.
That sounds very unpleasant.
And so I had about 5 seconds where I was like, oh, wow, that doesn't hurt at all. I'm so amazed that it doesn't hurt. And then
what kind of, if any, footwear were you wearing at the time?
Sandals.
Ah.
Perfect.
We're German by nature, so socks and sandals. Yeah. Shoes, it wouldn't have mattered, by the way. It wouldn't have helped. Also, if I'd been wearing shoes, I wouldn't have been able to get them off.
Oh.
So. So that would have been even worse. So I basically screamed a whole bunch of obscenities and went into the bathroom and doubled over for about 10 minutes. And Derek was like, are you okay? I'm like, no. Can I do anything? No. Is there anything? No. Just leave me alone. So I stood in the bathroom for about 10 minutes trying to figure out how bad it was and if I needed to go to the emergency room. And Derek was pestering me. Of course, this is Saturday afternoon, holiday weekend, pretty much. And after a while, I said, well, I'm going to have to go have somebody look at my foot because it was bleeding through my sock before I ever made it to the bathroom. So I knew my foot was bleeding.
It's Black Friday followed by Surgery Center Saturday.
Yeah, exactly. So we called the urgent care and said, okay, is this an urgent care thing or is this an emergency room thing? Because we just don't want to waste our time at urgent care if you can't help us. And they said, no, come on in. So I went on in and they're like, ooh, that looks grisly and ugly. Also, it's going to hurt. Also, you're going to lose your toenail at some point. And then they took me for x-rays and then they talked about, well, we can't stop your foot from bleeding. So they used super glue on it. And then they were talking about having to pull the nail out. I'm like, nope, you're not pulling the nail out. Not right now, anyway. Maybe next week. But turns out I fractured my big toe. I broke a couple of my other toes. But there's really nothing they can do for the broken toes unless they set funny. But they're pretty much straight at this point. And my big toe is just fractured. It's not broken. So unless it acts up, there's really not much they can do for it. So
that means it's got cracks in it, but it's not like broken through?
Correct.
So they don't do anything.
Nope.
Okay. So, and since this is an audio podcast, let me take you back to, I think, our first Halloween period where Drew and I talked about, an American Werewolf in London. There's a scene where David Naughton changes into a werewolf, very famous scene, and his hands and feet stretch out. Where Brother Jay's big toe looks like he's in half transforming to werewolf.
Oh, I can give you a picture if you want to put it up. It's nice and disgusting.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture. It's horrific.
Ugh. So, on a scale of one to holy shit, how much does it hurt?
It's just slightly less painful than my kidney stone.
And walking around, I'm sure. Can it fit in a shoe easily?
Well, I've been taping it up with the self-adhesive wrap. The kind of the stretchy wrap, that sports wrap that sticks to itself. So I've been taping all my toes together because that's the only way they don't hurt is if they're taped together. So it does fit in my shoe, but walking is interesting. Mm. So
a lot of heel walking, I imagine?
No. I still walk like normal. Just my foot basically just becomes a club because I don't really have any toes to articulate against. So I'm not very sure-footed. I'm not doing a lot of long-distance walking, so my commute is now basically I'm being dropped off at work and picked up because I can't really walk to the bus right now. And I couldn't drive and park at the parking garage and walk, so it's going to be an interesting convalescence.
Man, I'm sure glad I didn't give you, for your birthday, that gift certificate to the rock gym I was expecting to give you.
So it'll be fine. I mean, it's gonna suck for a while. Hopefully, it will be healed up in a couple weeks so I can chase my nieces. Because otherwise, it's gonna be difficult to babysit. But I'm sure they don't mind me captive. So
now, instead of self-adhesive tape, could you use that flex steel stuff? Or Flex Seal stuff that, as seen on TV, can you just dip your foot into some of that or spray it on?
I'm sure I could if I wanted all my skin to fall off.
Oh, you could turn a screen door into a boat. You can turn your foot into a flipper. Come on now.
Yeah, I'm sure I could.
Can wear some of those Spock boots from Episode 5 or was Movie 5?
Spock boots?
Are you talking about the jet pack boots?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
Maybe not.
Star Trek V, yes. Where Kirk falls off the mountain and Spock gets him with the boots.
Yes.
Also, where he rescues Bones and Captain to get them up the elevator shaft. Except the boots are designed for three of them.
Yes. So it's easily the worst of the six movies.
Yeah. Which is why Drew is wrinkling his nose and probably hasn't seen the movie in 20 years.
Oh, his nose, his forehead looks like a Klingon. Yeah.
We did see the theater, I believe.
I think we did. Yeah, we must have.
I don't know. I never saw it in the theater.
You were probably working.
you probably got us on a list. We saw it for free.
That's probably true.
Oh, hey, speaking of which, have you guys seen the movie Trolls? Trolls?
No.
It's surprisingly good. The music is good. The animation is good. I give it 4 stars.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a sense of future podcast.
Well, it's not as good as Zootopia, but it's just as good as Finding Dory. So.
Was Zootopia the one with Jason Bateman and Shakira?
Yes.
Okay. I've actually seen that one.
Yeah, it's good. I like it a lot. It's got lots of references. Storks was actually pretty good, too.
Yeah, I forget if I told you guys, I actually took Elle to go see that in the movie theater, just the two of us.
And how'd it go?
Like a real movie theater, not just like Beartooth.
Yeah.
Well, she loved it.
Yep, we're big fans of seeing movies. But it's so expensive. Ugh.
Yeah.
What else? Anything else on the agenda? poor brother Jay Flatfoot. Maybe has dad seen pictures of that yet?
I'm not going to send dad pictures of that. He could send me pictures of his bloody knee. He wins. Come on.
Well, I suppose.
Besides, I don't want to take his glory away.
His glory.
This is his time. Yeah, this is his time. He gets to just wallow in it for a while. So.
Hey, we got him a toilet riser the other day.
I don't even know what that is. So.
Put you about 3 inches higher than you would normally be, so you don't have to squat down to sit in the toilet so much. Like, I don't know, if you guys have a relatively new toilet, you may already have like a comfort higher level toilet, like I think we do, but because your parents' toilets are pretty low to the ground.
Nah, I have a normal one, but I mean it's a wide mouth, not a standard,
like,
because I have a because I have a bidet seat. So.
Oh, that's true, yeah. No, I was telling Dad that you should just think of, every time he goes, you should think of the cliff diver. Has a longer way to fall.
Oh, God.
Splash. I told him he wouldn't, you know, until he does it the first time, he won't think it's so funny, but he will be laughing as he is pooping.
Thanks for that mental picture. Thanks a lot. That's what I need in my head. All right.
Splash.
Ice machine?
And table.
Yes.
Okay. Is it new?
No.
I don't think we've ever heard it before.
No, but it is super loud. When we're upstairs, we hear it go off. The first few times, we thought somebody was breaking in.
I don't think I've ever heard it on the podcast before.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We've never heard it before.
Did you use a lot of ice earlier and it's kind of empty now?
We used some ice earlier, yes.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
I'm positive it's gone off during the podcast before.
I seriously have never noticed it.
Me either.
And we've noticed it twice today.
Oh, no, so it's super loud today.
Yeah. So unless your microphone is right up against it, I don't know.
No, it's like you dropped a bag of marbles.
Yeah.
Or perhaps a heavy end table.
So see, I shouldn't feel so, turns out money is just money. So,
I had been telling boyfriend Jesse I had an extra thousand. Well, I have a remaining $1,000 in my health savings account. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to spend that between now and the end of the year. Problem solved.
Exactly. Yeah.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.